It's February 7th, 2017, Tuesday Night Live. I wanted to take up an issue pertaining to the Exodus. There are certain things that are a little bit unusual, maybe strange. And one of the things that we find, which I think we'd agree is strange, is that in spite of all of the suffering that Hashem, but through Moshe, because of the Jews, in spite of all the suffering that the Egyptians suffered because of the treatment of the mistreatment of the Jews, so you would expect that they would have a tremendous amount of hatred for the Jews. And yet we find something which is very, very counterintuitive. It sort of slips in between the cracks over here, and that is that the attitude, let's assume it went through a transformation, but the attitude, at the time when the Jews left, the attitude of the Egyptians to the Jews, and especially to Moshe, was one of tremendous awe, respect. Now, how do we see that? Because another strange command was given. This is something that Hashem promised to Abraham when he told him about the future. And he just told them that when they do leave, they'll leave with great wealth. Of course, where's the wealth going to come from? So it becomes more explicit in Shemos. It's mentioned a number of times. This must have great significance. If you take a look at Shemos, for example, in the story of the burning bush, the first dialogue between God and Moshe when he assigns the mission to Moshe. When God assigns the mission, so he mentions this fact. Sent a voicemail. Just give me a second over here. Yeah, if you take a look, page 306. That's a very, we haven't really gone through that. That's a whole study. I don't think I could do it in one session. The dialogue between Hashem and Moshe at the burning bush. According to the rabbis, that takes place over a span of 7 days. Okay. They learn it out exegetically. So there was a lot of weighty ideas. We'll see. Maybe we'll yet have time to take it up. But if you take a look at page 306, when God is telling him, he's laying out the whole plan for him, telling him that I know you go to Pharaoh and tell him to let the Jews go and serve me in the wilderness. Notice that he never told Paro to free them. He just said to go and serve me. And God is saying, he's not going to listen to you. Moshe knew that all. Well, he's not going to listen to you, and I'm going to have to perform my signs and miracles. And ultimately, it will not be without a strong, mighty hand, which we know the mighty hand is a reference to the slaying of the firstborn. But if you take a look at verse 21, so...
Anyway, is this another issue of free will? I know it's not your topic tonight.
I just want to deal with a different aspect of this, which people might find troubling. But God is saying, I shall place the favor of this nation in the eyes of Egypt, and it will be that when they leave, they won't leave empty-handed. And a woman will request from her neighbor. Now see that it says v'sha'alah. Sha'alah in Hebrew has two meanings. That's why it's very important for tonight's class, that the word in Hebrew can mean ask, that's a question, can also mean will borrow. Okay? Bear that in mind. So that's true of a number of words. That's why Hebrew is not that hard of a language, because the very same root used in different contexts. You don't have to know that many words, you know, because one word can be used in 20 contexts. If you know the root, you can sort of figure it out. The Torah has deliberately chosen a word which can be translated request. It can also be translated will borrow. Okay. Now, a woman will borrow or request from her neighbor, and the one who lives in her house, I guess a boarder. She may have an Egyptian boarder living in her house. She'll request vessels of silver, vessels of gold, which I guess means jewelry, although maybe not limited to that, and garments and clothing. And you'll place them on your children, your sons and your daughters, and you will empty out Egypt. So, but not by stealing from them. The Jews had ample opportunity to steal from them when they were getting smitten. That's another thing. That's, save that for the next week. How the Jews treated them. Okay? But this is a very strange command that God is issuing, that before you leave, you're going to leave with, but I'm telling, but what's also strange about that is that you can make the case that the Jews were entitled to compensation. Just like the survivors, the Jews were entitled because they had stole, I'm sorry?
Reparation,
yeah. Compensation. Yeah. They stole their labor. They subjected them to extremely harsh treatment. So it's only right. But it wasn't done in the manner that you'd expect. It was not done in the manner that you would expect. Because you would expect then that Moshe would make that a part of his demands of Paro. Perhaps that is to say that he didn't make it. He didn't do it that way. He didn't make it part of his demands that, in addition, we want to be compensated. We don't want to leave empty-handed. We want to be compensated, and so on and so forth. That's not the way it happened. It came about in this manner that they would. Each person was commanded, not commanded, I mean requested, to go and ask their Egyptian neighbors and so on.
Why didn't they...
On page 346, the time comes. This was what we just read, what took place at the burning bush, when God is foretelling what's going to happen, telling them in the future. Now the time has come. Because on page 346, Paro has refused the first nine plagues, and basically God is saying, okay, game is over. I'm going to send him a blow now that he's not going to be able to withstand, and he's going to send you out. So now we're getting ready for the Jews to leave. So take a look at the top of the page, verse 1. And God said to Moshe, I'll bring yet another plague on Paro and on Egypt, and afterwards he will send you out from here, and when he sends you out, it will be complete. He shall drive you out of here. The term gar, in other words, he's going to drive you out of here completely. Divorce, that's the term that, divorce from the land. Then God says, please speak to the Jews and the ears of the nation that they should ask. Again, the same word in Hebrew, Yishalom.
Yeah,
they should ask, or you could translate it, they shall borrow. Each man from his friend and each woman from her friend, vessels of silver, vessels of gold. Doesn't mention the clothing in this one as it did in the first time, but they did take clothing. That's not so important for me right now.
Why is God do it very often? So
knowing God, when God, the term please, because it's a difficult thing. It's a difficult thing.
Asking your neighbor for their stuff.
Yes, extreme. Put yourself in that position. You're a slave, and you're going to go to these people, and you're going to ask them for their finest jewelry, that watch, that Rolex that you've got. I mean, it's psychologically... Psychologically, for the Jews, it's an extremely difficult thing to do.
So then what you're saying...
Point that God uses that word, please, when he's speaking to Moshe, is something which is amazing. It doesn't get the attention it deserves. That we're giving it now. It deserves tremendous attention.
But it's another class.
I'll tell you why. Just quickly. It does deserve another class, but I'm willing to tell you because it's too important to put off. No, I don't think any other people would have such a dialogue with, in other words, with their concept of God, because God is the master of the universe. He's created us. We have absolutely nothing to say to God. We can't say no to God. We can't.
Chutzpah, we
can. Yeah, well, but chutzpah's crazy. Not a sane person.
Right.
So the idea, and God is telling us things for our benefit. The idea that God would use the word please in speaking to his own creatures that he completely controls and owns, that's like crazy. Who would imagine? So if people were writing a dialogue between the creator of the universe who controls everything and us, his puny creatures, they wouldn't have God. It's like a king. Do you think a king speaks this way to his subjects? over whom he has to. We're talking about a king with absolute power. He doesn't have to use the word please. But apparently there's something, Hashem is teaching us something. That even though, of course, God doesn't need the word please, but he has consideration. We need that. It's a term which expresses a certain sympathy for our plight, for our situation, for how we take things. So even being ordered around, even if it's by God, there would be a certain resentment perhaps. So God shows that dimension. It's an amazing concept. Okay, so then look at the next verse. The next verse says, and God had placed the favor of the nation in the eyes of Egypt. Also the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the eyes of the servants of Paro, and in the eyes of the nation. So that's, of course, an amazing kind of thing. Here's this guy that's your torturer, he's your worst enemy, and yet you'd expect that they would hate his guts. And to the contrary, he had tremendous esteem. And because of that esteem, it carried over. Esteem for the leaders is very important, and esteem for the people. And let's see what happened. Did the Egyptians come through and part with all their treasures? If you go to page 358, where it tells us about the Jews actually leaving Egypt. So if you take a look at page, it tells us that they baked matzos for the road. They didn't have time to have bread and so forth, and they carried them on their shoulders. Now, verse 35, and the children of Israel did according to the word of Moshe, and they borrowed or requested from Egypt vessels of silver, vessels of gold, and garments. And God had placed the favor of the nation in the eyes of Egypt, and they granted their request, or they loaned them. And they emptied out Egypt. So the prophecy, of course, came true. Of course it came true. Now, what's the issue that I want to deal with tonight? There are many commentaries that ask the question that, from a moral standpoint, were the Jews guilty of deception? Because they had never said, the Jews had never said that they're going to leave and not come back. Okay, all they asked for was permission to go a distance of a three-day journey in all this to serve God. All right, that's a sabbath. I'm not taking, but and in point of fact, they didn't intend to come back. Was that a deception? That doesn't bother me so much right now. What I'm bothered with right now, it's not my question, it's a question that all the commentators, and that is, when the Egyptians gave them all of these gifts, were they giving it as a loan? And because we're going to celebrate, we're going to worship our God, right? And then, but they had an obligation to return. When you borrow something, then you have an obligation to return it. And of course, the Jews never returned it. They kept it. And some of it, unfortunately, went to the construction of the Egel. That's where they got the gold from, the golden calf. But the bulk of it went for the construction of the Mishkan. But the question that's being raised is, did the Jews have a right to keep it if indeed they acted like they were borrowing it, and if you're borrowing, you have to give back? That's the question that I wanted to take up. You may answer this question and say, but one second, the Jews were entitled. The Jews were entitled, and they were only basically taking back or getting back. I don't even know if they're getting back all of it. With the reparations from Germany, whatever it is that the Jews got back, believe me, it doesn't make up for what they lost. But first of all, what they lost is irreplaceable. But the amounts, still in terms of wealth, amounts that they plundered, and you experiencing any kind of time in the concentration camp. But you might answer and say, well, they did. They did deceive them, but they had a right to do so. Because they had stolen from them. They had subjected them to slavery, and they had taken their wealth, their labor, and they were entitled to compensation. You might say that, and that, okay. However, my question would be, now, the problem with that would be that, why would, if the Jews were on their own, let's assume God did not tell them to do this. God just was not involved in this at all, which is strange. Why God would be involved in this whole thing? Why is the wealth, why does it assume such importance? A topic I will try to deal with next week. Why does the wealth assume such importance? But had God not been involved, God just said, do what you want, you know, don't even, I'm not talking about that. I'm just going to get you guys ready to get out of Egypt. All right? But then the Jews on their own, completely on their own, decided that, you know, we're entitled to compensation. And we're going to, on their own, they got together and they came up with this idea that you should loan us, if you lend it to us and so on and so forth. And they convinced the Egyptians to lend it to them, never intending to pay it back. Then you might say, well, the Jews had every right to do so. Just like if they would have taken money from Germany. Let's say the Germans didn't want to give reparations. They refused. They did it for selfish reasons because they needed to do it. They had to do it. They had to find some way of getting back into the world of civilization, a kapara, an atonement for them. That's why there were many Jews, Menachem Begin amongst them, who were opposed to reparations because they said that it's blood money. We're giving them exoneration for their sins. They're paying. We can't do that. All right, I'm not going to, whatever. The people themselves that went through it were entitled to get whatever. That's my opinion. Were entitled to get whatever. But let's assume the Germans didn't want to do it, and the Germans refused to do it, and I came up with some scheme. Somebody came up with a scheme to scam the Germans out of the money. Some real deception and a deal.
Bernie Madoff.
Right. That's where he should have used his talents. See, there's a place for all kinds of talents. What would you have said? Let's say he would have worked out the scheme, and he would have been able, through that scheme, to scam millions or billions of dollars. And then he said, you're right, it was a scam, but we had every right to do it. What would you say? I'll tell you what I would say. Kol hakavod, all the glory. Because if you owe me something and you refuse to pay, you know, there's a lot of people with Iran, you know, and they shot down that plane. Right? I mean, there's all kinds of terrorism, all kinds of suits. They were awarded money, but the money is frozen. They couldn't get the money, and so on and so forth. If money is coming to you, and the other person refuses to pay, you have a right to take it any way. It's your money. You have a right to take it any way you can. Do you want to say? One of the answers, it's tantalizing, because I said that same word, v'yishaluk, you can translate it, they asked. Not that they borrowed. Right. Or you can so the commentators are divided on this. Now, in order to answer this question, a famous commentator called the Rashbam, he says that, he translates, and a woman shall ask of her neighbor, he says, as a gift, complete, as a complete and absolute gift, not as a borrowing, because it says, that's why the verse says, and I'll place the favor of the... Why does it have to say I'll place the favor? Because if it wasn't for that phenomenon of the favor, they're not going to give gifts to... But they must have had such a... That's an interesting thing, because why would people give their finest jewelry, their finest garments to... Because sometimes you look up to this person, the very fact that they would accept your jewelry makes you happy. You want to give to them. One second. Okay, and then he quotes other verses. Where it says Sha'al, the same term, God says, ask of me, and I'll give you nations to inherit. In other words, that term, he's saying, clearly in this context, due to the fact that it's accompanied by the idea of the charm, is talking, so if that's the case, if in fact they never asked to borrow, they asked it as a gift, and the Egyptians gave it as a gift, so then they had nothing, they had no responsibility, the question is removed completely. That is a very acceptable answer. However, there are those who learn that, we want to understand the entire spectrum, okay? If you learn that way, that you shouldn't translate it as a borrowing. Right. You should translate it as a request.
They haven't won until
they said go. And they gave it to them. So then my question is removed completely. So You gave me a gift. I don't have to give back to you. That's an Indian giver. Mm-hmm. Nor is there any record that the Egyptians came after them. Okay. Although there are those who learn that that's how Paro motivated. Why would the Egyptians chase after them? And part of the motivation was to get our stuff back.
Yeah.
Okay. Now let me read to you another great commentator, which I've quoted over the years, the Sephorno. I don't know if you remember, but I've quoted him, and he's a great commentator. And he says the exact opposite of what we just heard. He says, even though you will receive everything from them by way of a loan, because he's taking it that way, and you will be obligated to return. Person borrows, he's obligated to return. However, he says, you will acquire everything. This is a very relevant argument. You will acquire everything afterwards legitimately. It's true, it's going to start out as a loan, and you're going to be obligated to return, but something's going to happen.
You're going to invest it.
And you're not going to have to return. What happens? He says, when they run after you to do war, when they run after you to do war against you and to take everything from you, that's a war, so either they were going to kill them and take their property or capture them and take their property. It's war. They declared war against you. This is such a relevant argument to what's going on today in the world. He says, for indeed, they all died in that war because God fought for them. That's clear. They didn't defeat the Egyptians. That was God said, I'll fight. You just stand and watch. I'll fight for you. Then it's a matter of measure for measure. When it comes to war, it's measure for measure. That if you come to war against me, which means and if you win, you're going to take everything. And if you lose, I'm going to take everything of yours. To the victor belongs the spoils. That's basically what he says. This is the law of warfare. So that's his answer. Now, the reason I bring it up is because it's so relevant to the situation of Israel. And you know, the Knesset just passed a law pertaining to the West Bank settlements. Okay, I don't know. They passed a law, I think, legalizing or annexing. I'm not sure the exact legal. That question, and the Palestinians are going crazy, that's Palestinian land, that's theft, and so on and so forth. Well, we'll see how it plays out. Netanyahu is coming here next week, we'll see. But my argument is for that it's not Palestinian land at all. That land, first of all, there was never a Palestinian state over there. That land was by the UN, when the UN partitioned in 1947, they partitioned that area. It's true that that land at that time was designated to become a Palestinian state, and the other was, but the Jews took it and established a state. They rejected it. They went to war against the Jews. That war, that land then was illegally seized by Jordan. Between 1947 and 1967, it was illegally seized by Jordan. Nobody made a whole complaint, but it wasn't recognized. Only two nations, the United States, did not recognize it. Then they attacked Israel in the Six-Day War. They attacked Israel, Jordan did, and Israel defended and took over that land. So Israel, in self-defense, Israel is the only, not to mention the whole historical and the biblical basis, but Israel is the only nation that has any legitimate claim to, because you came to destroy us. You came to destroy us. You declared you're going to destroy us. You lost laws of warfare. Land belongs to us. So far, you could translate the word either way you want.
Right.
You could say, well, it wasn't a loan, it was a gift. Then there's no problem altogether.
Right.
But even if you're convinced that no, that the Egyptians, they gave it because they wanted to lend it to them, but they thought they'd get it back and it was a loan. And the Jews were obligated to give it back, but then you have this other factor. They didn't leave well enough alone. They came after them. They fought a war against them. They were totally defeated, and now it belongs to the victor.
Yeah.
The question that's being raised is culpability.
Okay.
Culpability. Who has the culpability? And I wrote about this in this past week's article. It wasn't the only theme, but I brought it up in passing. Was it just Paro? You could say, what do you want from the people? Do the people have any responsibility, the Egyptian people? And they did suffer the blows, although Moshe warned everybody in advance, so nobody had to suffer. What is the responsibility of the Egyptian citizen, the Egyptian people? Now, in answering that, I asked another question. What?
I don't know if he read it.
What is the... What's the responsibility of the German? I'm not talking about... This is a very, very big question. What should our attitude be to the German people? Well, all right, a number of years. Let's assume going back after World War II. Because I don't want the argument, well, these are the grandchildren. They'd had nothing to... Let's go back to the right after World War II. What's the responsibility of the German people? Now, the Nazis, that's a different story. Because the Nazis were complicit. They worked, in terms of the final solution. They're guilty. But what about Nazis who were ordinary Nazis? Germans that were, they didn't join the Nazi party. They were Germans. And do they have any responsibility for not just all the crimes that Germany did not just do the Holocaust? That's the biggest of their crimes, but waged how many millions of people were killed as a result of World War II and their conquests, and at least 50 million people, right? Something along those lines, and the destruction. To make a long story short, my opinion is that they're guilty.
Yeah.
Because they voted for Hitler.
Okay.
And they voted for him, and they did not protest. They knew it was pretty obvious what he was doing to the Jews for a number of years until World War II broke out. He was persecuting the Jews and Kristallnacht and so on and so forth. And they supported him completely. So you have a responsibility. I think this is part. Do not stand idly by the blood of your brother. In other words, your responsibility, it's not only the ones who do the killing. Now, it says when it came to the slaying of the firstborn, it said every firstborn that was in Egypt, from the one on the throne, from Paro in his house, to the firstborn of the captive. That is, they had captives from wars, and they were in their prisons. They weren't even Egyptians. And they were the firstborn, and they too succumbed. So Rashi asks, well, why were they? They were not Egyptians. They had nothing to do with the enslavement of the Jews. Why did they deserve to be punished? So you know what he says? Because they rejoiced in their hearts when they saw the Jews suffering. So now the average Egyptians, they enslaved the Jews. It was part of the decree, but who were the... You had a farm, you had land, this and that. You would give them free rein to take the Jews and use them for slave labor. So two things. First of all, the Egyptians participated in it. Secondly, they abetted. They knew that it was going on. They didn't rise in protest. They should have risen in protest and said, this is completely wrong. And then these people only did good for us. What right? They didn't. They obeyed. They abetted evil. They're guilty.
They
protested at the very outset before he rose to that power and had that position that he never would have got. Yeah. After the fact, since they went along with everything, he became absolute and he could do whatever he wanted. Okay. It was futile, but they aided, they voted for him, they aided, they joined these. Take a look at these mass demonstrations, Heil Hitler, you know, things like that. They knew what he stood for. So they're guilty. They participated in it.
I thought they would be imprisoned.
Germans rejoiced.
It's just as bad, isn't it?
They benefited from it. They liked it. They were very, very okay with the situation. But I'm showing you how far it goes. That it mentions that even the captives who had nothing to do with it, they were in prison. They were watching it unfold, and they rejoiced, and so they deserved to be punished. To rejoice at the suffering of somebody else is a terrible, terrible evil. We don't look at things that way. Because we only look at the one who takes the knife and chops your head off. It's not just that person. He could, who makes him possible? It's the thousands and thousands of people that are apathetic, exactly, that don't care. Since they don't care, they're not going to take a stand. They're not going to do anything about it. That is a tremendous evil, which is not recognized as such in our society. But you see, according to the Torah, it's a terrible, terrible thing. Let's say that we had to build the Beis HaMikdash today. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. And we were lacking a certain type of a metal that we needed.
Mm-hmm.
And another country owned it. We would just take it from them?
Well, we can ask them for it.
Oh, you can ask them for it.
But what if they say no? Why did they ask?
Okay.
The question is, why did they ask?
It seemed that it wasn't only... I would say, look, part of the money was to be used for mitzvah purposes, for building... Yeah, but not all. A lot of it was for...
I don't know.
Look, it's an obligation. you had a slave. If you had a slave and then it becomes illegal, you send away the slave. You have to send him away with the means. You gotta give him a gift. You gotta give him things. He needs things. Otherwise, he's still a slave. You gotta build him up. You can't just send the person out. Okay, you're free. I'm not gonna enslave you, but he's still a slave. Yeah. By the way, that's a huge problem. That's a huge problem because what this thing is hinting at, and we're gonna take it up next week, is the idea of the slave mentality.
Right. That's where you're going.
That's extremely, extremely important. Yeah. And you see in American history that the black people to this day still suffer.
Yeah.
And no one is able to figure out how to deal with that problem. You could free the slaves. Lincoln freed the slaves. Okay, fine. But inwardly, that doesn't mean you're producing someone who's totally a free person. That's another tremendously significant aspect of the story of the Exodus from Egypt, that God had to work it out in a way that they would be able to overcome the slave mentality. To a certain, again, I'm going to say something a little bit maybe harsh, I don't mean it that way, and I would say it's not just the black people, but to a certain extent, you can see certain elements of that in the Jewish people. To the same degree, obviously, but I'm saying
victimhood,
a need to be concerned, overly concerned about the approval of the Gentiles, what will they think of us, and so on and so forth, instead of doing what's right. So, a certain element of that slave mentality, because we weren't only slaves in Egypt, you know. Take a look at our history.
Right.
The pogroms, it's after Eve. The pogroms and the Holocaust and the persecution, and right, all those things. Have had, they leave a scar. It's not a simple thing. But before we finish, I want to conclude. This is the Evan Ezra, another great commentator. And he, I believe, because you only have two possibilities. Either it was a gift or a law. You don't have a third possibility.
How are you finding all these different sources in that?
I'm reading now from the Evan Ezra, who again, you can see he's addressing this problem. He says, there are those who, you know the word kvetch, who complain. It's not the exact word he's using. I mean, there are those, like among Jews, that complain. They bemoan. And they say that our fathers were thieves. Meaning because they took this from the Egyptians under the false guise. Apparently he's learning that it wasn't a gift. Apparently he's learning that they asked for it as a loan. Because otherwise, what are you complaining about? Then we're not thieves. All right? He says he raises the question. But he gives an amazing answer. He says, let these people look and see that this was a command from God. They didn't go on their own to take. This was a command from God. Yeah, yeah. Goes back to what David said. And there's no basis to ask why. Don't ask why.
Okay.
Because, let me just say it in my way and then I'll read it. Who owns all this money? Whose money is it? What did Abraham, when Abraham wanted to spread the word of God, so he practiced hospitality, he invited people in, and because he wanted to get close to them, he wanted to teach them. So what did he do? When the time came to leave, they started thanking him. So he says, what are you thanking me for? Oh, the food. You know, food? It's not my food. It's God. That's how it's God's food. God gave it to me to use for the right purpose. So what he's saying is, the Evan Ezra, a similar idea. It's God. The Jews did not go of their own accord. Now you see why God continuously tells them, go and speak. I'm telling you, it belongs to me. I gave it to them. They misused it. I'm taking it back and I'm giving it to you. That's an amazing, amazing idea.
It's too dark.
He says, you can't ask why. You can't ask why God did this. You can't ask why. You can find good reasons why. I mean, I can do it. But you don't have to find the good reason. It belongs to God. He created everything, and he gives wealth to the one whom he wants to give wealth to, and he takes it from his hands, and he gives it to somebody else when he wants to. And there's nothing evil about this. Because Hakol Shelohu, everything belongs to him. Isn't that how many times, right? In the Birkas HaMazon, okay, and the blessing.
Trumps everything else, doesn't it?
No, but yeah. It's because he wanted it for the Mishkan. I still go back to that.
Well, but I'm saying, he says you don't even have to say that.
Right.
He's happy even if they didn't build a Mishkan. I want to get the, you know, you see, because he's making that point as well. You're asking why. You want to know why God did this, and maybe you can find, maybe you can't. He's saying, but it's not necessary. Because we can ask why when it comes to God. It's His will. It was His will to give it to them. Apparently they abused, whatever their case. It's His will to make this person wealthy. But God gives, and God, the Lord gives, the Lord takes. I mean, may the name of God be blessed. That's what he's saying over here.
Can I like the Trump?
You can inquire as to what the benefits are, what the reasons are, and so on and so forth. But he's saying, if you're concerned with the issue that our fathers were thieves, then you're making a complete mistake. Because they didn't take anything. They followed the will of God. God made a transfer. God made this tremendous transfer of wealth from the hands of the Egyptians. So you don't need this. You don't need about the war and like the other commentators.
None of this would have worked if you would have started with that opinion.
Well, no, that's required.
If you... Well, that's something else. But you read the book. You read the story. At no point do we find that the Jews got together and made a conspiracy of their own to take this wealth. According to him, they would not. That would be questionable. According to him, they apparently, in spite of what happened,
you would think that they should do it because they would still be thieves if they didn't want to take it.
According to him, if they deceived, then it would be there'd be thievery involved. That's what he's taking up. And our fathers, right, in spite of the way they were treated, they didn't want to go out as thieves. But he's saying, take a look at the story. It's beautiful interpretation.
It's a good closing argument.
It's a beautiful interpretation because at no point do we find the Jews have any desire to do this on their own. They're being, God is requesting, please do this.
Yes.
Please do this. Because why please? Because if you don't do this, then you're not going to get any wealth. And or you'll get it by being thieves. But I'm telling you, I have arranged for this. Yeah. So therefore, it's not theirs anymore. So all you need to do is to show your faith in me. But now you'll understand why you have to go get it. Because the Jews aren't thieves. They wouldn't have gone to get it. They'd be ashamed. Why am I taking somebody else's stuff? It would have bothered them. But this is a test. This is a test. If you believe in these principles, that when I tell you to take that money, it means that it belongs to me. That's by taking that money, you're affirming that everything comes from me. It's a mitzvah to take that money because you're affirming that everything comes from me. And if everything comes from me, and I'm telling you that I want you to take it, that means that I've taken it away from the Egyptians. If I've taken it away from the Egyptians, you have every right to it. Now do you have the guts to follow that? That was the idea. Jews are not the kind of people that take revenge. Most people in history that have been subjected to enslavement and mistreatment, and then they turn over, you know, they revolt and they're in power, they become even more cruel to their former oppressors, right? That's the Jews never were like that. They didn't oppress the, they never hurt the Egyptians on the way out. The Egyptians, as the Jews are leaving, they're all in a state of complete confusion, and they're burying their dead. They could have been in the 3 days of darkness. The 3 days of darkness, they could have taken anything. They could have done anything. They didn't do it. When the camps, the concentration camps, were liberated, The Russian prisoners who had suffered, a lot of them were captured Russian, immediately they went on a binge of revenge, every German that they found. And I'm not going to criticize them. I wouldn't criticize them.
Did they just take from them or did they kill them?
Beat them up, kill them, whatever. The Jews, hardly. They were just thankful we made it. In fact, if you read the stories, you'll see that when Jews, subsequent to that, you know, the soldiers, the liberators, and they had Nazis, you know, locked in into, you know, like fenced in, cavern, and so the concentration camp survivors were walking by, and, you know, they're all spitting, and one Jew, not, you know, they were yelling and cursing them, and one Jew did that, and then afterwards he felt guilty. Sounds crazy.
Yes.
It sounds crazy. I mean, to me, I just imagine my emotions would be to find the... I would be so kind. I don't know. You never know until you're in the situation. But I think it's a good thing.
Don't give me a gun.
Yeah. But I'm just trying to show you that that's not in the nature of the Jew. To want to take revenge. And even you take a look at what's amazing. Even today you see the same thing in Israel. When the worst terrorist atrocities and so on and so forth. And you don't see, very rare, where the Jews go on a rampage. Occasionally you'll have someone who breaks. You know that doctor in Hebron years ago? Baruch, I forget his last name. Baruch Goldstein. He broke down and he went out because there was all these terrorists, and he went in and he started shooting a bunch of Arabs that were praying. And the whole Jewish nation condemned them. So given the way the Jews treat the Palestinians and the Arabs, given what they've been subjected to, you see that there's no desire. There's no desire to the country. They have their super liberals who are always like trying to, let's make it Oslo, let's trust them, let's be, that is the mentality, that's the attitude. I mention that because I'm saying that if it wasn't from Hashem, then people might have felt
maybe
some guilt.
Yep. It would have been chutzpah
then. My thinking is, especially like when it came to issues of the reparations, the Jews that went through the Holocaust, done right, that money is their money.
Yeah.
And I have no sympathy. I have no sympathy for the Germans. My emotions of sympathy, I have a tremendous amount of sympathy for downtrodden people. Mm-hmm. And I have a tremendous amount of, I guess, the opposite of sympathy.
Yeah, but not genocide.
Of anger and a desire for revenge against wicked, evil people. Those are the way my emotions. And the rabbis say, whoever has mercy on the cruel, on the wicked, will wind up being cruel to the innocent.
Yeah.
So those emotions, you have to be very, very careful. Compassion is a wonderful thing, but misguided compassion can destroy the world. And that's a major teaching of Judaism, that you have to be very intelligent and very wise. You can't just serve God by following this emotion or the other emotion. Everything must be utilized with tremendous wisdom, and then if it's used in the right context, then it's a good. But compassion, if it's used in the wrong context, then it's an evil.